Good evening, Facebook, wow. Twitter, and anywhere else that you're watching us or listening to us even. We are back. It's Wednesday. Hashtag Wednesday webcast. And we've been away for a while over Easter and what have you, and recovering and recuperating and having snoozes and runs and things. But we are back, and we are back with a new series, which has been weeks and months in the planning. We talked about it for 2 minutes before we came online. And we are doing the Alternative Preparation Course. So it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. But this evening, Al and I are joined by Kat Teresa, who seems to have frozen my end. She has a cup up to her face, but she doesn't seem to be moving. So I don't know.
That's unfortunate. Well, we'll keep going until she
reappears. We will keep going. Yeah, she might reappear. Yeah. Tonight's really about the kind of early stages of thinking about adoption, what you might want to think about, some of the kind of tales. Now, as we know, Kat is not just a psychologist. Oh, she's gone. But she's also an adopted adult. So we will look back. She will come back, no doubt. But in the meantime...
We presume she'll come back. It could be
she'll come back.
This could be the worst series
we've ever done.
Oh, no.
There we go. She's back.
Yay. Oh, I'm sorry. I disappeared.
No, you're all right. You froze with the mug up to your face. And I was thinking, I don't know if she's actually...
Zoom froze face is
It's cracker, I don't know.
Anyway. So where were you up to, Scott? Where were you?
I was just saying, Kat, that this alternative preparation course, and we're going to be talking through a lot of themes, and tonight obviously joined by you as a psychotherapist as well as an adopted adult.
Not a psychotherapist.
Oh.
I'm an occupational psychologist.
Al Coates. See, this is what happens when I let Al Coates do the marketing, right? Not only does it look horrible, he puts the wrong words in the wrong places.
Well, he didn't actually on the marketing thing. It said psychologist, which is fine, but not psychotherapist.
Okay, psychologist. Sorry. I chose the wrong word there.
Yeah, that's only because I can't spell psychotherapist. Otherwise, I'd have called you that. I tell you, flying start, slick.
I tell you, it's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. We're live as well. We can't edit this. Sadly. Well, we can edit it in the edit, but not when we're live. The premise of this series really is to think about the things, and it's not to put people off, it's not to have a go at the traditional preparation courses, nothing like that. But Al and I have no vested interest in recruitment. We're not recruiting adopters. We don't have children to place. We don't have all that kind of pressure on us that local authorities, regional adoption agencies, voluntary agencies have. So we thought it'd be nice to look at it from an alternative perspective and maybe not necessarily put people off, but be kind of balanced and have a different view on it. So hence the reason, over the next couple of months, actually, because this isn't just a 1, 2, 3 week thing. This is a good couple of weeks.
We're
going to be lynched by the end of this. We've got a number of guests on. We've got two adoption social workers. We've got therapists. We've got adopted adults. We've got, who else have we got, Al? I'm struggling now. Panel members. Yeah. We're hoping to kind of hear from all the different areas that potentially in an adoption preparation course you wouldn't normally hear from. And I think that, you know, if we can kind of fill you in with a little bit of information that might help you on your way or make you think about things differently, as we'd like to do, then that's what the aim of it is.
Absolutely.
Go. I was going to say, great you're doing this, because adoption is so complex. There's so much complexity, and I don't know how is that really going to be covered in those traditional courses that are about more about recruitment and reassuring people and so on.
Yeah.
The complexity, we've got to dive into that.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't want to over milk the fact that we're going to be able to cover everything, but we'll cover the areas that, no other prep courses can.
Refreshing parts of the preparation courses. I guess the other caveat to all of this is that we're parking the whole issue about the validity of adoption and adoption in its current form. In some ways, we're sort of
Yeah,
that is a conversation to have, but that's not what we're going to do here. So it's in some ways we're putting it aside, and we're just going to say, how do we get people ready to become adoptive parents? And I guess a start point is, I mean, full disclosure, I've only ever been through one adoption preparation course, and that was 22 years ago. So my opinion on this is not particularly valid. I can only remember one thing, and that is I can remember being told that it's a two things, actually. One thing is, I can remember the social worker's name. She said, remember, adoption, every adoption is complicated. And that sort of stuck in my head. And the second thing we talked about, nature versus nurture. And that kind of, that's never come out of my head. So that's, what about you, Scott?
The thing that sticks in my head was our kind of attitude when we went in. And clearly, it was at a time where laws were changing and stuff for same-sex couples. So it was kind of, there was a little bit of kind of anxiety because, you know, there was nobody really who we could connect with to say, well, how was it with you and stuff? But the ignorance that we had and thinking, well, you know, we can give these children, whoever they turn out to be, a better life. And that was kind of, that was the foresight that we had before we kind of went into that room. It was nothing anybody said, that was us. And I think throughout the whole preparation course, that was our attitude to it. And, you know, looking back, I'm ashamed of myself for thinking like that because, you know, I've learned so much over the years. But, you know, that is, you know, we're talking 16 years ago, and since then I've done lots around preparation courses and stuff, but that was kind of our experience of that. And, you know, that's not, that's definitely not the attitude to have. And, you know, it doesn't really matter when you go into adoption. It's just not, that's not how it works.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, we will come back to your bad attitude, no doubt, really, across the whole webcast series.
The whole of our lives.
That's not such a bad motivation to get you through the door to start exploring things.
True.
You know, I mean, it's not the only motivation, and you need a whole lot more behind that. Yeah. But as a starting point, that's not so bad for wanting to
I'm not
to
sure that
parent.
Was our only motivation, but just that's the one that sticks in my head because I'm ashamed of myself for it. Does that make sense? Mm. I think you'd be, you know, when you're ashamed of something, you tend to think more about that than you do about the positives. There was probably lots of things, otherwise we wouldn't have spent 2 years looking at it before we went to that, so there was clearly some other stuff, you know, but certainly my shame and my memory, and my husband is probably thinking very differently, not that he watches this, but he would think of it very differently, because he has a different kind of view and opinion on it. So, but you know, I think that shame thing, it works in adults, not just children, doesn't it, you know.
True. Can I start to ask Kat some questions? Because she is our guest. I'm going to start to delve into Kat's
guest. Friend of the show as well.
Friend of the show. This is your third time on, Kat.
And best friends.
Bestest friend. Kat, obviously you come from the perspective of being an adopted person yourself. Is it odd looking from that side of the fence, as it were, looking in and going, these people getting ready to be my parent? Do you know if your parents had sort of any preparation or?
I think late 60s, I think not. I think there was some interviewing went on, but I just think you were given a baby and off you went. You got on with it. In fact, the funny thing about the amount of work that goes in now is fantastic. Well, I hope it is. I assume there's loads of input and loads of content, but in those days you got a letter saying there's a baby here, come and pick her up 10 o'clock. If you like her, you can take her home. So things have moved on a lot since then.
One hopes. I'm sure they have. Well, we know they have, yeah. So that's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I guess that implies that there was no thinking that being an adoptive parent was any different to a biological parent.
Yeah, and I suppose that was the aim, and that those days there was no way of finding out your birth certificate. It was illegal there was no legal route to getting your birth certificate in those days. It did change in the 70s. But I suppose that means that there's a lot that I can forgive my parents for, okay, which I don't think adopted parents nowadays will quite have the same grace. So, for example, say one issue is privacy around my story. Okay, I've got memories of being middle of Sainsbury's doing the shopping with my mum, and, you know, somebody she works with comes up and says, "Oh, who is this? This is your daughter. Oh, lovely to meet her. Doesn't she look like you?" Mm. And, you know, when that happens in your adoptive family, it's kind of, what do we do here? Well, I would have wanted the ground to swallow me up at that point. But what made it even worse was the way my mum would say, "Oh, she's adopted." Mm. We didn't ever discuss that or agree that. And I totally forgive my mum for that and for those, you know, disclosures that were never, I was never consulted about, because she just went into it with the right, you know, the right motivation, with, you know, everything she did was from a place of love, so it's fine. But I suppose that's a real issue that, that I get stuck on sometimes, is that issue over privacy.
Yeah.
Because I've been in those situations before where I've heard an adopted child's story in the playground, and it's just in conversation, but actually it's sort of two or three links away from the you know, the parents. There are other parents describing an adopted child situation, why that child is has been put up for adoption. And those situations make me so uncomfortable because I think there's something very, very personal and private about this huge issue of why a child is, what's the word, available, up for adoption. You know, there can be nothing more painful than that almost in a person's life. It is the most personal thing about them. And I understand why parents share stories completely. It's natural. It's a way of connecting. And also it's probably, for a lot of parents who've got difficult difficult situations to describe, it's a way of getting emotional support, isn't it? So I get why that things are shared, but actually it's not the adopted parents thing. It's not their story to share.
Yeah. It's interesting as well, because we've gone, I started, so I'm going to finish. When I think back, and I'm thinking, I'm not just thinking about my kind of experience of this, I'm thinking about others as well. There was this real emphasis on being open about the fact that your child's adopted. Now, obviously, in our situation, you know, we had no choice. I mean, not that we would have chosen it any differently, because we didn't know any different, but, you know, we were two men who were adopting two sons. So clearly, you know, that was, it was obvious. Well, it was obvious to us. It might not, I don't know. You've got me thinking about that now, but what was made clear to us from the start was that, you know, there was definitely a need to be more open about adoption nowadays. Now, when I think back to when we adopted, and we adopted a 7 and 8 year old to begin with, we couldn't control what they told of their story. Of course, we, you know, we wanted them to be safe, and we didn't want them to overshare and upset themselves, and, you know, that sort of stuff. But, you know, I think about my oldest son, who, that was the first thing he told his classmates, was that he was here because he'd been adopted. So there's a really, I think there's a really fine balance with this one, isn't there? Because what they share is up to them. But actually, as parents, you see that as them giving you permission without actually giving you permission to be able to say, "Yes, I have adopted." And then with alternative families these days, because let's face it, there is a lot of them, you know, whether it's single people or, you know, same-sex couples and, you know, transgender and all that sort of stuff, it's really, some of it is quite obvious to the parents, but it may not necessarily be obvious to the outside world. Now, I know that's not your experience, so I'm just saying, you know, compared to, well, over the years, it's changed, but there's a real emphasis on being open and honest about it. So have we gone too far?
I suppose you definitely don't want adoption to be a secret, because there are other adopted adults that, you know, chatting to recently about this on Twitter, where they felt a level of shame because that had been hidden. They had been told by their parents, "We're not talking about that. We don't say that." So there's a fine line before your child's old enough to consent in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
Then their story, it is okay to say to people when they ask, "Oh, you know, why has this situation arisen?" To say, "Well, that's private. That's their, that's their story. It's to their tell. Story. That's an okay thing to say when somebody asks those, you know, nosy questions."
Yeah.
I think people are people are naturally curious. And I think that because adoption holds this kind of this sort of mythological fairy tale place in our culture, that people are genuinely interested. I rarely think that people are maliciously, nor was he. They just want to know. People want to know. But like you, I remember that we, with my eldest three children, people would say to us, oh, so why are they in care? People would come up with all kinds of harebrained ideas why they came to the care system. And we sort of had a stock answer, which was, look, they're not old enough to really understand their own story. So it's just not appropriate that we tell other people until they know it. But then I did have friends. One of my friends was sat at a barbecue with my, you know, I think Kirsty was maybe six or seven, and she just told them everything. And my friend was genuinely mortified and kind of came to them and said, they've said all these things to me. I'm not meant to know. And I went, well, she told you, so it's fine. You know, and it was a six-year-old's version of events. But like you say, I think that story is a really important thing. So is that one of the key messages you would sort of want to get into prospective adopters' heads, like privacy?
And the really important thing you said there, Al, is get your pat answer ready, you know, right early on when you're going through the process and you are thinking about children's stories, children's situations, is be ready to not reveal some of the difficult bits or any of the difficult bits, just reveal what is needed, you know, what that person at the nursery gates are going to need to know, and the rest just save until later.
I think it does make good sense. I think, you know, looking back now, and we can always say this on, you know, once we reflect on stuff and looking back, can't we? I think there is a certain element of pride as well. And I know as a same-sex couple, we were proud to be the parents of these two children. And to us, it was obvious why we couldn't have biological children, but maybe to the audience and the world outside us, you know, there were certain people who knew, like, you know, maybe the lady who was on the till in Sainsbury's, as an example, you know, she might have known that we were a same-sex couple and we were good, you know, we were looking to have children and stuff like that. But it's not necessarily the case that everybody knows your story. So, you know, I guess it is a tricky one if you're looking at it from both perspectives, isn't it? Because it is a child, and you're so right with everything you've said, and I'm not denying that, but there's a certain level of excitement and pride in terms of being able to be this person that you never maybe thought you could be, never thought you should be, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about that from you know, maybe from the kind of same-sex LGBT community rather than...
Yeah,
you know,
and Scott, that's your story, so that's definitely yours to share. That's a really lovely story. That's a really lovely bit about it. So absolutely yours to share. I suppose the bit I'm more talking about is the bit about all adoption starts with a really dreadful situation. Yeah. Every single adoption starts with something dreadful, something catastrophic. And for the adopted child, baby, child, adult, it's probably the biggest loss that they will ever experience.
So
it's the details around that that I almost think this shouldn't need to be said. Everybody should know you don't share stuff like that. You wouldn't. But honestly, I have been in so many situations where I've known about kids. I shouldn't have known about them. I think it's one of the really key things to get in place in your mind early is I need an answer to so that I don't reveal things about that child that's so deeply personal and, you know, it's theirs.
Yeah.
So we've got a few comments on Twitter just to share with you. I haven't got my glasses. I cannot see, man. I'm going again.
You've not got your glasses. When did you start wearing glasses?
I've got these magnifying ones I found around the house. Paula's got about 400,000 pairs, and I just picked a set up. So here we go. Right, this is me.
Oh my days. Right. I've seen them all now.
Shut up. Look, so we've got someone, Luana Luddington's message put comment on and said that's so helpful. I've got a great support network, and of course I talk things through my friends and family, but I'm so conscious of the confidentiality and privacy. It's very helpful to hear your stock answers. I've already said that's confidential already a lot, but it would make a part of me wants to talk it over. And I think that's maybe another thing for preparation. I mean, you can go to a preparation course and they'll tell you, you know, all that you do child development, but how do you find, I feel hilarious wearing these. How do you find,
you look hilarious.
There's lots of questions on Twitter. So I'm on Facebook. So I'm going to, there's a few comments as well. So I'll get back to them maybe at the end.
Yeah.
But
that's really important, Al. That's really important actually, is to say all the time we're saying this, it's really crucial that any parent has people they can trust in their lives that they know they can share things with on a one-to-one that won't go outside that relationship, that friendship. And, you know, they're really, really important. And that's a different situation because you have a need for emotional support. And, you know, if you think about some of the situations that will bring a child into adoption, you're both all too aware of them. There may be a level of vicarious trauma for that parent that there's the child that they really love, that they've been looking after for years, they really love, they know really, really horrific things. There is a need to share that and to get emotional support and to have somebody that can just give you that really, you know, metaphorical hug through a conversation sometimes. That's okay.
Because I think from recollection, it's all flooding back to me. It's 20 years ago that we were a bit like confidentiality Nazis. We wouldn't even talk to each other about it, Paula and I. And we was trying to be so confidential. In fact, we didn't tell my mother. And eventually we kind of said, look, we've got to, like you say, there's got to be somewhere where we can safely and again, confidentially air some of our, is this because of this? You know, is this, you know, I'm really struggling with X, Y, or Z because of X, Y, and Z. And I think that's really important. So that's maybe that we should write a list as we go, like our treaty that we can pin to the wall of the Department for Education. So one is confidentiality, and that includes storytelling and, or even just to make, I would occasionally tell people just packs of lies, but that's maybe me being.
See, I don't know if that's good, better or worse, to be honest with you, if you're just telling
them that.
You go away thinking,
do
that. Oh, okay.
we found.
I think generally, in terms of, you know, it was on a need to know basis. But even then, now just thinking about what you've said, Kat, you know, some of the people probably didn't need to know, but it was more about the, you know, the school in terms of, you know, some of the kind of the reactions to behaviors and things like that. Well, you know, it wasn't necessarily saying, well, that's down to this that happened when they were, you know, blah, 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 blah. But it was more about kind of making them aware of the kind of, you know, the kind of, I guess,
context for the behavior.
Exactly. Rather than the specific thing, but sometimes it's very difficult. And I think that, you know, looking back on it now, even, you know, even maybe recently, you know, obviously new school, new country, you know, trying to kind of bring a school up to speed, it's difficult not to go down into the detail, but you're right. And, you know, I think that maybe there is a responsibility of the people that want to, that need to know the story to actually speak to the person whose story it is. Rather than, you know, thinking that the responsible adult is the person that should share it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, exactly, Scott. Yeah.
I'm going to be the boring one here with my glasses on the end of my nose. I can see the screen. I'm just...
I'm sorry, this is a new thing. This has never happened before. It's like we've gone away for a year and come back and I was blind as a bat.
It's too much screen time, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'll probably guess that.
The adoptions, right. We're part of this kind of whole design of doing something came together was because we were going to, you asked a question on Twitter and we're having this debate about confidentiality. I think, Kat, you sort of said, hey, isn't there some sort of guidance from the powers that be, and actually there is, you know, as if by magic. So I thought at this point you'd maybe bring in the law, some hard facts, so the people can find this. The Adoption Agency Services 2005, section 24, and I'll read this out, so bear with me, I'm not the best public reader. Where an adoption agency is considering a person's suitability to adopt the child, the agency must make arrangements for the prospective adopter to receive such preparation as the agency considers appropriate. This includes, right, moving my glasses, this includes information to the prospective adopter about the age, range, sex, and likely needs of the children who may be placed for adoption. The significance of adoption for a child and his family. Now, that's a really interesting one. What does that even mean? Because that's really subtle, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we're meant to know about the significance of adoption for his child and his family. So over to the psychologist.
Well, I suppose that would come down to the story that is going to play out for the whole of that adopted person's life. Significance. So... they are never going to not be adopted. And we've already said that situation has started from some catastrophic event. So I think you have to go into adoption with that in mind as parents, that this is not ordinary parenting. I mean, that's really basic, but it's not just the settling in period and the finding the right school and the meeting the immediate needs. It's the teenage years, which in my experience of myself, my brother, loads of different adopted people, they're really, really ropey. They can be really difficult. And then it's into adulthood, and there are loads of challenges in adulthood. Having your own child as an adopted person can be intensely painful and intensely repairing. I've had both within each baby I've had. Is intensely painful because you see how much a newborn absorbs and smells and listens. You see what they're doing. They're just, you know, absolutely absorbing everything in. So it can be so painful to know that at that stage you were given, you know, you were handed over. But it's also intense. It's a huge opportunity for bonding and attachment that you may have, that has been disrupted for you. So you have a lifelong legacy of that. That's so many adopted adults talk about that. So this adoption isn't going to just impact your family during the initial settling in stage of having a baby or a child come to live with you. It's your adopted parents forever, and you're parenting an adopted person forever, a person who is forever adopted.
I think that's
really interesting.
Because Scott and I, we've both got children who are young adults. Well, adults, you know, adults. And I adults. Think they're adults and they are young. And some of them not so young. And I think that the shock, I see a lot of people my age, at the same stage, who there's this kind of penny dropping moment where, I'm not having to do the school runs, but the needs of my children are, I still need to be switched on to the needs of my children. And I think, you know, be that when my children have children, be that when my children have reunion, what do they need? What do they, I don't need to just default to being a parent. And I remain an adoptive parent who's my children's needs may be very specific, that when at maybe 35, they say, I've met my birth mom. What do I do then? And how do I, you know, just those complicated questions. I guess they're all very personal and stuff. So,
and there's another side to that. There's another side to that as well, though, because, you know, I get what you're saying now. Excuse me. But there's also the side that, you know, do adopted people want to hear their adopted parents say, I'm their adopted parent? You know, there's that. But there's also this lack of kind of foresight, I think, because I thought, bear with me here, I'm fine now, a couple of years in. But I thought, well, you know, by the age of 18, I moved out when I was 18. Yeah. So, you know, and my parents didn't give me any help after the age of 18. And this after the 18, and, you know, we've not just got a different style of, we've not just got a different world here. We've got, you know, we've got a lot of kind of complex layers and issues and what have you, but we've also got a different generation, which is potentially more dependent on their parents anyway. So we've got kind of we've got a lot to deal with, but also there's nothing, you know, nobody's sitting in the prep course saying, well, and I've had this discussion on Twitter in the last couple of weeks, actually, what happens when they're 18? You know, what, because I think that, you know, as if you're new into it and, you know, you're thinking about it and what have you, you're not thinking past the point of them being children. You're really not thinking about that. You're thinking about the childhood experience. You're thinking about how you can parent and how you can help and how you can do this, that, and the next thing. But then there does become a point where there becomes that independence, you know, whether it's financial or, you know, they want to move out or, you know, whatever it is, and how you cope with that, because actually you're still a parent.
Yeah.
Whether you're an adopted parent or not, it doesn't matter. You're still a parent.
Yeah. I think there was a reason why out of my whole social group when I first went to university, there was a reason why I was the one who was in tears every evening on the public payphone that we used to have.
Oh, do you remember that?
In tears to my mum saying, I want to come home. Every single day, she thinks for about 6 weeks.
Right.
And she was parenting an issue that was that arose through my adoption, because I wasn't really coping with being away from home. It was a big, it was massive for me. Mm. And I did stay, but I stayed because she told me I had to stay. She said, you're not coming home, because if you come home, you won't get back there. Enough. It wasn't fair enough. It was horrid sort of love.
We've changed the locks and moved.
But yeah, I've seen my son go to university totally happily. I mean, so different, you know, so different. Mm. I think those things really can play out and catch adopted parents, you know, in a way you think they've got a settled stage and,
I was just going to, I was letting you finish, but I wanted to ask you, and we've got Vicky who actually asked a question on in a couple of weeks, actually, as part of the series, because her question was, should we be looking at teenage years and adulthood in preparation? Now, my point, my kind of view is, not really, but we need to be aware of it and we need to revisit it at some point. And this is like another issue, you know, but like if you're a foster carer, you would have ongoing kind of training and what have you. As adoptive parents, you don't. But what is your thoughts on that?
I think so much support needed, really. Mm. I don't know whether in preparation it's the right time, though, I have to say, because you've got really, really important things to be thinking about at that stage around the settling. Mm. And all of that side of things. And these other things we're talking about, confidentiality and all that sort of thing. So that's really loads to cover. And can you really take on board something that's 10 years ahead? Yeah. I just would say you wouldn't remember it 10 years' time.
Yeah. It'd be like watching the Jetsons, wouldn't it?
You know, the Jetson character.
Spaceships and stuff. You don't know, do you? You just don't know. You just don't know.
Like you say, Scott, that's terrible that there's no follow-up. So adoptive parents are dealing with the teenage years just, you know, on their own or with whatever support groups they've managed to access. Mm. That's tough, I think. Mm. There needs to be more there.
I'm going to draw us back onto my little list from the regulations, because that's my safe place in the regulations, hiding. So we've talked about the significance of adoption for a child and his family, which is huge. And then the next one on the list is about contact between a child and his parent or guardian or other relatives where a child is authorized to be placed for adoption or is adopted. And then the next one, the skills which are necessary for an adoptive parent.
I would love to know what the skills are. What are the skills?
What skills do adoptive parents need?
All the parenting skills.
Well, clearly. We'd hope. Yeah. That's a minimum.
Feed them warm. Al, is that referring to birth family contact or natural family contact? First family?
Yeah.
Everyone has their own preferred language. Is that referring to?
Good question, Kat. I like your question.
I'll read that again. In paragraph... Preparation for adoption includes provision of information to the prospective adopter about contact between a child and his parent or guardian or other relatives
family. First family. Oh, I'm glad you're raising that, if that is what it is. Or let's just segue into that if it's not. It just strikes me, and this is another area where adoptive parents of old can't be held to account for not knowing anything about first family. So that's just, you know, you just rule that out. But nowadays, I think you have to understand that if you're adopting a child, there is another family. And that family it's not their first family or the natural family or the birth family. They're just family. And they're really, really important to that person. And the complexity of that, I don't underestimate, is huge and different for every situation, isn't it? But I think if you can have if you can have an open mind to thinking the starting point is their family and therefore they're important to my child, then you open yourself up to explore possibilities for contact and conversations with your child. The days of closed adoption surely must be over.
Yeah.
They're numbered. They have to be numbered. I think it's a measurably emotive issue, isn't it? Because we know we could go onto Twitter now. We could ask a few simple questions. We could start a bun fight that would go on.
Yeah.
The fire would rage for weeks because it is such an emotive issue. I think there's these sort of two polar positions, isn't there, where people are saying, oh, but the behavior of the parents negates their right to see their children from a risk point of view. That, you know, and of course there are families, there are situations where that is true, but that is the extreme. And the other extreme is where there's no good reason why they shouldn't just be all open doors all the time. Most of us inhabit the middle ground. Most children and families and situations are in the middle ground. And I think it's, but people just, if people don't want to do it, they gravitate towards the extremes, don't they? Or they do want to do it, they go to the other extreme. How do we prepare adopters for that? Because it's such emotive stuff.
I think Kat's frozen again.
I think she's enthralled by my comments.
Yeah, she is. She's just focusing and wants to pay attention.
She's slipped into a coma because
she's gone.
Yeah, she's gone. She's running.
Her husband's cut the Wi-Fi off with a pair of shears.
Yeah. Well, the reason I say that is because I think that in principle, the idea of contact is really good. But I think often when the reality hits home of I've got to take my child to meet this person, I've got to maintain links to a person. Oh, Kat's back. Hey.
Really?
It's fine. It's don't fine. Mind. You'll get a letter from our solicitors ruining everything. I was just saying about the reality of adoption, about a reality of contact versus the theoretical. And I remember that my children were in their sort of mid-teens, young adults, mid-teens, and they'd sort of reconnected with some family members. And one Christmas evening, they said, oh, we're going to go and see them. And they left and went to see them. We totally let, you know, we waved, it's fine. Me and Paula went, oh, that's a whole new reality we weren't expecting. Really, you know, the intellectually I went, of course, that's fine. Emotionally I went, no, just stay. That's so difficult, isn't it?
So difficult, yeah. I mean, I would say, yeah, I can't talk about pain. But from the other side of it, okay?
Yeah.
I had really loving adopted parents. They really loved me. And still it was massively important to me. Massively important to find my birth family. And they were good. They were good. They didn't talk about it really and search me was something I did on my own because they didn't talk about it. So that wasn't really great. But I just can't, and not all adopted people feel it's important. Loads don't. So I only speak for me. We're not a homogenous group by any means. So, you know, you might adopt a child and they just aren't interested as they turn into a teenager and adult, and that's fine. But I think, you sort of have to get your head around the fact that that other family may be important to them and then you may be sharing in some really emotionally painful way. I get that, Al.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. You know, honestly, I've sort of emotionally seared to nothing. So I was fine, but I just thought it's really interesting that visceral reaction that often so many people have because we can sit in a preparation group and go, well, of course, it makes perfect sense that, you know, we've read the research and we've had an adopted person come in and we've had of course. And then 3 days down the line, someone knocks on the door and says, do you think you could manage a bit of contact? And they go, like, hell no. Didn't expect that feeling. That's a gross exaggeration. But I don't know, Scott, you've probably got a different perspective on that, perhaps.
Well, I do remember, I remember discussing it in the preparation and it's interesting because it seemed logical that if there was to be contact, that there should be contact, if that makes sense. Yeah?
Yeah.
I think the one thing that I would say is that it is very much driven by social workers. So, and, you know, I'm not dissing the social workers here, just before anybody starts writing and complaining. I'm not dissing them. obviously there's a clear reason why, and probably done on a risk assessment from the 1970s, like the template for the risk assessment isn't from the 1970s, where, you know, there may have been a risk. Obviously, clearly, and, you know, I totally get that there are some children who should not have contact with their first family, their birth family, their, you know, that kind of, their families, shall we say? I don't know. Yeah.
But we know that's really rare, don't we? We know that's...
Well, of course it is. Yeah, yeah, it is. But what I would say is that when you're sitting there listening to that in a preparation course, you do tend to say, you know, I remember it being described as indirect or direct contact. And the chances, and bearing in mind, this is a few years ago, so, you know, again, don't be writing in, but the chances were that it would be indirect contact because that was the most common, and it was safest. It was also the best for the child because, you know, putting a child in a position where they potentially have direct contact may upset them in the home. It may upset them for weeks. It may upset them for days, you know, before, after, during, however. So, but I think that in some ways, there was this risk assessment done on whether it was suitable or not, but actually there was no risk assessment done about if it wasn't done. Mm. And I think that is perhaps...
Good point.
I'll tell you, I'm full of them tonight, honestly, because...
That's the best thing you've ever said. I'm writing it down.
Put the date on that and the time, okay?
Meme. But, it's a meme. I'm like a meme.
But Jen, in all seriousness, though, you know, we, you know, as parents, and I know because I sit and I listen, you know, people think I just kind of sit and chat to people. I don't. I do listen. And, you know, there's a number of parents who have said the difference it has made in their children when they've opened up to a very kind of organized way of being able to have contact with their birth parents has actually helped them in the home, in their home. There's ups and there's downs and there's rounds and there's abouts, but on the whole, it has helped them. So why are we not doing the risk assessment the opposite way around?
That's a really, really good point, Scott. I would say that some of the times I have felt most love for my adoptive mum was when she welcomed my birth dad into her home. I don't know what she was going through inside, and I'm glad she didn't tell me because I couldn't have responsibility for her emotions at that stage because my own were enough. Yeah. But she welcomed him. So the love I felt for her at that stage was just huge. It was huge. So it really is powerful.
Very powerful, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm done now. I'm exhausted. My brain has just gone, right, that's it for tonight, mate. Sorry.
You need to lie down in a dark room. But I think that is really interesting because I think that is a really key message. You know, those two points is that our adopted children should never be responsible for the adult's feelings.
Yeah.
That it just full stop. There's nothing to add to that. And that's hard.
Well, I think there is something to add to that because I think that when you go through the preparation course, I don't think anybody kind of explains that to you. I don't think anybody says, you know, that at times there will be times where you will feel emotionally and physically drained from being a parent, but actually you still have a job to do. And yes, you know, we know there's all forms of kind of layers and depression and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We do know that exists and, you know, we know it exists and we acknowledge that it exists, but you're still a parent and you still have to crack on with that, whether you're an adoptive parent, a foster care or a birth parent who's, you know, bringing up their own children. That, you know, we still have to do those things and we have to make sure that, you know, our cups are full, that we're doing our self-care, et cetera, et cetera. But again, you know, some of this, not all of it, some of it can be missed in the preparation course in terms of preparing people for that.
Yeah, and the cup being full bit is as well, you need to ensure that you've dealt with your own, the issues that you have had that have brought you into adoption.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, if there's been infertility, that needs to be dealt with. Because adoption is so complex. And a lot of adopted adults that I've spoken to have felt this.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, tune in next week to find out what Kat Teresa really thinks.
Yeah. She does look like a news reporter there on the screen, actually.
She goes, yeah, it's live from Beirut.
BBC News.
I think it's a really interesting point, though, isn't it? That, and I see that often adoptive, I'm part of different groups, and I see that people talking about their infertility in quite, oh, that was 6 months ago, it's done, dusted now.
Yes.
And that remains, yeah. I mean, that remains the predominant reason why people come through to adoption. Mm. You know, there's a raise and other reasons. Yeah. And I think that preparing people not to do the assessment as in do it to the test, you know, don't just give us the answers we want. Be honest, because that doesn't negate you from being an adoptive parent, but let's just be frank about what's really going on.
And I think that there's I'm not part of those communities, Al, obviously, but, you know, there is also this thing about having come to terms with your infertility and all that sort of stuff, but actually you also have triggers around, you know, various different things, you know, and it's about coming to terms with those as well and being prepared that they might come up for you. And I think sometimes that's, you know, there's a little bit of lack of awareness of that, the fact that you may have had counselling because, you know, I hate seeing these sorts of things out loud, but you may have had, you know, three miscarriages and you've decided that's it, you can't do that anymore. You may have gone through IVF, but actually if you that's fine to have counselling about that and to come to terms with that, but actually you need to be aware that in 6 months, 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years down the adoption route, there may be a trigger that actually, you know, it clicks for you. So it's not just about, okay, so I've done that, it's in a box and duh, it's there. Mm. Because it can affect the relationship you have with that child as well, if it's, you know, and that's a really important thing, I think. Really important.
Yeah. It's lovely you came back, Kat. We were starting to worry about you.
Can't hear you, though.
We'll have a whip round and maybe pay for your internet.
That'd be brilliant.
I mean, I think that I don't particularly want to add to that idea, but I think we were just reflecting what you were saying about loss and counselling, and we're going to get Vicky McEwen on next week, and she works directly with families. So I think with hindsight, someone should have got spanners on my head, on my mind, and really had a good look inside what was going on, not just
social workers are good,
you know. It's not to dismiss social workers, but they're not. It's not their
They're not therapists, are they? They're not counsellors. They're not, they're not psychotherapists. They're not psychiatrists, you know. And I do wonder if there is an element of that. It's not just about assessment by a social worker. I think that everybody, you know, I'm just thinking about if someone was to look in my head, what they'd find. Jeepers, creepers, you know, there's no end to this stuff. And when I look back on the early days of adoption and how you know, there's a lot of naivety there, but you know, becoming a new parent, becoming a parent of an individual who's 7 and 8, you know, all that stuff, as well as dealing with your own issues, there's a lot there. And we, you know, it's not just about, it shouldn't just be a social work assessment, I don't think, but.
And so much better to be, if you were to be proactive in knowing what your own triggers are going to be, what your own issues are going to be, that you can really get in early when you start feeling stressed or low in mood or whatever it is for you. Get in early because you can identify it and recognize it.
I'm remembering that we had an adoptive dad, Andrew Taylor Dawson, on a few years last winter, I think, the winter before, and he was sharing his experience of going through the process, and what he said was they got halfway through and they realized they had to stop and they had to go away and really get some things resolved, and then they came back. And I think that is incredibly healthy to just say, actually, some of this stuff is going to be difficult. And I think the reality is that adoption isn't, there is not, the sense of fairy tale isn't there. And it, like you said, Scott, in 6 years' time, you may be the parent who's struggling, whose child doesn't get invited to birthday parties for a whole host of reasons. And you may be the one, the imagination you'd had when you wanted to be a parent was going to birthday parties, taking your child and being part of this little social. and that's where the loss is. And I'll tell a story, then I'm going to maybe ask you to answer some questions. I've never particularly sort of experienced a sense of palpable loss of not having biological children, apart from once when my friend, his wife had had a baby, and he popped in to see us. He was picking up stuff. And he told his story about, you know, they dashed to the hospital, you know, those stories about when people have, you know, all of the drama and the excitement and the anticipation and baby arrives.
Yeah.
And I just was overwhelmed. I had to leave the room because I was overwhelmed. I thought and it just came out the blue. And I sobbed like I've never sobbed in my life. And then I was fine. But some of this stuff is lurking around and we don't know. We need to really bomb it out, because that can never wash. That's not my children's fault. That's nothing to do with my children. They made no choice. That's all down to me. There's maybe a question you can help with here. There's loads and loads of comments on the Facebook feed. So if you can join and maybe answer them if you want to, Kat, afterwards, or maybe you don't want to. Near you. Some of our followers, you know, some of them are, you know, slightly.
They're all lovely. Some of them. Oh, 1,000.
They're all lovely people.
Whatever of them. Yeah, exactly.
I'm just trying to find the question now. I can't find it. But one was one person was saying they'd found their child, or they'd become approved adopters. They'd gone to, this is when we were talking about the stories. They'd gone to adoption activity day where they'd sort of kind of picked out a child and filled in literally a form, an application of interest.
Expression of interest.
And they're saying expression of interest, that's the word. And they were saying, what do I tell my child? How do I explain that? Because they want to be honest about it. I'd maybe ask you a difficult question. I think.
I find those things really upsetting to think about, actually. You know, the beauty parade. I just don't know what to say, actually. You'd want to have a big think about that rather than say something. I would want to have a think rather than say something off the top of my head, actually, because that is quite, it's quite upsetting, really, to think that's how you met your parents. That's how you presented.
I mean,
well, I think the lack of a
complicated issue.
Sorry. Yeah, I was going to say the lack of an answer as well means that it needs a little bit more thought than just, you know, a kind of blasé response. So perhaps that's one that we should answer offline rather than online.
I'm happy to think about that.
I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that, actually, because I would be interested to hear your thoughts on that as well, because I'm still not sure about activity days, to be honest. And it's a very American concept that's come over come over to the UK, but it does link children with parents. So it's kind of in my head, I'm having to fight both sides with that one. So, and I get you from the perspective that you come from, that's difficult. That is a very difficult way of,
But you know who brought them to the UK? It was Bridget Betts, wasn't it? She working for Corum, and Bridget is an adopted adult herself.
Mm.
So she, and there's a podcast, it's a couple of years back now, but she talked about that and was very, it's just one of those tricky issues. But I think even that, preparing adopters, you know, when we're talking, the crux of tonight is preparing adopters, but preparing adopters that you're going to have to have conversations.
Yeah, but surely that needs to be covered in the one-to-one social work that you do. Something as important as that needs to be delved into.
I mean, I've had conversations with my children that I would never want to have with anyone in the world in relation to their stories and the challenges and the adversity. No one's prepared me to do that. You know, I've got social work skills I can draw on, but I've had conversations I just would never want to have. And I think that's part of being an adopter, is that you have to embrace. You can't bury your head from that stuff, can you?
No.
But however you do it, you can't not do it. I guess that's, you know, we don't have an answer how to do it, but we have, I guess the plain answer is you've got to do something.
Yeah.
Because the truth will out.
Yeah, and I suppose if you're really worried about how to do that, there are resources out there. There are people out there. There are people that do therapeutic life story work Alna, that you, well, I don't come at it from that perspective, but I know some of them. So there are people you could draw on to say, we need some support during this phase of our parenting. Am I right? Can you get those services through?
Well,
wait a minute, he's putting his glasses on to check.
Shut up.
I hope people can access those sorts of professional services.
I'm not sure that you, I'm sure you can access them, but I don't think they're there as a standard.
Yeah, I don't think they're offering leaflets for them, are they? That's the thing. That's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a few people commenting on the whole idea of the activity days, you know, people saying that's how we were introduced to our children but didn't like it.
Right.
So that really complicated dynamic.
Mm.
But what...
A child will get to a certain age where you can be honest with them about that.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
You know, we did go to that. I mean, you have to be honest, don't you? You just have to drip feed it in age-appropriate ways. But you could be honest. We were really uncomfortable about that.
But, you know, I wonder if there is a difference. I mean, adoption activity days here are relatively new. They've only happened in the last couple of years. But before that, before the likes of Linkmaker, which is obviously a family finding service online, there was Children Who Wait. There was BAFS, Be My Parent. And it was almost like I do remember it being compared to an Argos catalogue to find your children. So is it the case that maybe we've just moved on in how we do it, or is it that it's maybe a little, I'm not sure how to answer that one. I wasn't even asking myself a question, but you know, whatever. But you know, is it the case, do you think, maybe that we've just moved on a little bit in terms of, you know, we moved to Linkmaker, which was online. What would we say, shopping online, you know, if we're going to compare it to the Argos catalogue, because, you know, that's how it feels. And is there another way? I don't know. Obviously, none of us know.
there's a lot of people commenting on Facebook or in relation to people who've got varied views and people who've been part of them. And I think that, in some ways, you know, we started with adoption preparation. I think when we get to matching, we should probably see.
Yes, I've jumped ahead a little bit. Yes.
You've jumped ahead, you know, once again, well ahead of yourself. But I think that this is part of the preparation. That, you know, get your head around this system. That you may have come to the adoption preparation with this romanticized notion of you're plucking babies from the jaws of jeopardy, but the brutal reality, which actually it does reflect in, he said, going back to the law, the safe place. Other elements that should be prepared are the procedure in relation to the placement for adoption and adoption itself. So should people need to be ready for the brutal reality of, you know, when we, this is 20 years ago, when we would, what they would do for us is they would identify a child who needed adoption, and then they would pick out two sets of parents and take them to a panel, and one set would win, which was equally as traumatic. That one set of parents would kind of like be taken through the whole panel process again, you know, 10 people, you say why you should be the parent or not. And that's obviously gone, because that's clearly borderline cruel. But we need to get people ready for the people need to be robust, don't they, to get through this. We can't have delicate flowers trying to navigate this system. That's maybe
brutal. Definitely. People need to see beyond the fairy tale.
Absolutely. I feel like this is a very odd podcast with me debuting my spectacles.
I think it's also a podcast that's probably raised more questions than it's answered. And it's interesting looking at some of the comments on Facebook and the conversation that it's instigated, and, you know, the kind of things. So Ant says that he's a foster carer and he didn't know that the children were being filmed and photographed for the advert you know, advertise for adoption. And that's the kind of stuff that's quite kind of concern, really. Beautiful. And it's also, there's also a story there for me when I'm thinking about the story that I tell my child, in terms of, or the, even the foster care, the connection with the foster care, because obviously foster carers know that, you know, there's going to be a plan for that child, but they're not entitled to know the full ins and outs of it. So, you know, hopefully that foster care will still continue to be a part of that child's life after placement. So surely they have, you know, there should be a kind of, yeah.
Well, there's all kinds. I mean, it's a podcast down the thing, but you are a psychologist. So we're going to plumb you for, we're going to get as much as we can out of you. Right. I guess we're at an hour and I'm sure you've got things to do and Scott's got his sock drawer to sort out and stuff. So what would be your takeaway points, you know, two or three things that you think are essential for a prospective adoptive parent?
And I'm going to mute myself so I can't interrupt.
I'd say the lifelong nature of it. You're not just thinking of adoption in terms of the settling in phase. It's going to be with you throughout your parenting journey. And I suppose this thing about whose story is it? Whose family is it? And really keeping all of your thoughts on the adopted child and that they have to live with whatever decisions you make early on about disclosure or about contact or so on. They're going to be living with those for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
So it's just really being conscious about the impact on that child.
No, I mean, I think that those two things are just essential, aren't they? That it's just setting people on the right course. And of course, there'll be lumps and bumps in the road, but.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah.
That happens. Well, thank you, Kat. This has been fantastic. I feel like it's like kicked us off into the long grass already because we've got so many thoughts. Yeah. And we're going to get lots of other people and sort of take us through each step of the way. So I hope you get your internet sorted out. It's been quite a worry.
It's gone again. Look,
she's gone again. Oh,
we can't say goodbye without saying goodbye properly. So you're going to have to.
So shall we?
Well, you need to do a little jig or something.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back at the farm, the birds.
Put your glasses back on. That gives us a laugh.
That's always a laugh. No. So Scott, we've got Vicky next week, and then the week after that, have we got a social worker who's going to talk to us about?
I haven't got the
assessment.
We've got two social workers, haven't we?
Yeah. Do you know what is really odd? We've never had an adoption social worker.
No, we have never.
We've never had one on. 5 years.
And look at that. We have two come along at the same time. Wouldn't you? Well, Adam and Eve.
Booyakasha. Check out our podcast guests.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to hear kind of two different perspectives from that, because I think that I'm not sure about one of them, but I know that one of them has been in the local authority agency for a long time and has since left, well, will be left by then. So it'll be interesting to hear the take on from the social workers, because they're involved in the preparation and all that sort of stuff. So yeah.
But not often happy to talk freely, and that's why we've never had an adoption social worker. Like we've had managers will come on, but yes, we've never had an actual practicing.
Never had someone who sits their butt on the sofa and talks to you. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Kat, so good of you to join us to say goodbye.
It's rubbish, isn't it?
Well,
it's all right. We're doing an office whip round for you. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Just come and sort it out, one of you, please.
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me. I was really delighted to be one of your guests. And I think it's great you're doing this series. Really useful for people.
Yeah.
I hope it is.
Well, hopefully so. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to stop the live feed now. And then
we're going to chat about everybody afterwards, aren't we? Yeah.
Well, we can look through the Facebook comments, of which there are Hydra.
I saw.
And then we can. Yes, very good. And it's all because of you, Kat, because you're very popular on the internet.
You are.
Oh, well, that's very nice. Not everybody's a cup of tea, though. I'm a bit
Marmite. It's either that or they were looking for furry cats on videos, and this popped up. I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, people like cat videos, don't they?
Yeah, it's true. Well, so goodbye, and we'll speak to you soon.
Goodbye.
Anchovy. Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.